This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 17th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 234 and happy Easter. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the Big Deal feature. A milestone on the way to Vancouver's October civic election. Hear what happened when Councillor Colleen Hardwick tried to get the Vancouver 2030 Winter Olympics bid on the ballot. Citizens got their say on the 2010 games. Why not now?
But first, is it just me?
Is it just me, or does Premier John Horgan have his priorities in the wrong order? On the eve of Easter weekend, the NDP announced almost $54 million in flood relief payments to 10 communities hard hit by last November's torrential rains and record floods. In some of the places, like the Fraser Valley and the Nicola Valley, people lost everything. The announcement happened the same morning that FIFA said Vancouver was in the running to be one of the 16 host cities for the 2026 World Cup. 4 years ago, you might remember, Horgan said that BC didn't want to give FIFA a blank check, so it didn't agree to the pricey demands of the soccer bosses. It's about as close to a blank check now as you can get, because it could cost taxpayers up to $260 million to host five matches at BC Place Stadium. Too many British Columbians are homeless. Too many British Columbians are dying of drug overdoses. Too many women and senior citizens are afraid to go downtown in Vancouver or Victoria because of the rise in stranger assaults. Too many British Columbians don't have a family doctor. Too many British Columbians are paying too high tax, and the BC government deficit and debt are too high to begin with. But Horgan, he's found money somewhere to subsidize the world's richest sport body. In this case, NDP means no decent priorities.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
The International Olympic Committee knows it's going to Paris in 2024, Milan in 2026, Los Angeles in 2028, and Brisbane in 2032. There is a big question mark about the 2030 Winter Games. The IOC wants to name that host by the time the Lords of the Rings meet for their 2023 annual meeting in Mumbai. Salt Lake City, Sapporo, Japan, the Spanish and French Pyrenees are all thinking about it. So are the mayors of Vancouver and Whistler, along with leaders of four First Nations. They want to reuse most of the venues left over from the 2010 Games. There are many questions, and Councillor Colleen Hardwick, who is running for mayor this fall, thinks the most important question is whether the public wants to pay for another multi-billion dollar mega event in a city with so many social and economic challenges. At the April 12th City Council meeting, Hardwick tried to get it on the civic election ballot. Here's how it went down.
Motion 3 was dropped, and now we're on to Motion 4, the 2022 civic election ballot question to measure Vancouver electoral support for the 2030 Winter Olympic bid. And I'm just going to clear the queue here, Councillor Hardwick, and then you have up to 2 minutes to make your case. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. In 2003, the City of Vancouver held a plebiscite to determine support for the 2010 Olympics. It was a standalone vote that cost $575,000. In today's dollars, it would cost over $1 million. Adding it to the ballot in October is the most cost-effective solution. Incidentally, the 2003 standalone plebiscite attracted 135,000 voters who voted at just under 65% in favor of the Olympic bid. And adding this vote to the ballot in October could increase voter participation beyond the current low rate of 40%. Another consideration is the fact that the International Olympic Committee looks favorably on bids that have demonstrated community support. So why would we not have an open and democratic process given all these considerations? Notwithstanding, it would be good to know what the impact of the 2010 Olympics were, how do we do financially, but we don't know yet because the books are embargoed at the archives until 2025, but that's another story. fast forward, the city council voted in camera to enter into an MOU with local First Nations Whistler and the Lillooet Nations to partner on a bid for the 2030 Olympics. Like any MOU, all parties are responsible to their own membership, and in our case, our citizens. So it has been alleged by the mayor that this motion violates the MOU. It does not. Paragraph 5 of the MOU reads as follows. This MOU imposes no legally binding obligation on any of the parties. Staff have acknowledged this after I asked why there had been no such indication in the staff input on member motions. So, does this council support our citizens' right to vote or not? Someone really needs to second this motion and to get it on the table. We have speakers signed up. Let them speak.
Thank you. Councillor Kirby-Young, your questions for up to a minute.
Yeah, thanks, Mayor. I have one, and I know that I've heard you say that legally the MOU between MST and the city to explore the benefits or feasibility of holding games, it doesn't require asking them with respect to a plebiscite. But in the spirit of partnership, I wonder why wouldn't you have asked them first for their input before bringing the motion?
Would they ask us for our input into them?
Just a point of privilege, Councillor.
Really not.
Mic's not on. Go ahead.
Sorry. Like any MOU, and I've been party to MOUs, each one of those parties has an internal responsibility to their shareholders, members, and constituents. So I wouldn't expect the First Nations to be coming and asking us whether it was okay if they had a referenda, for example. So it's conflating two different things. It's outside the scope. Furthermore, there is no structural relationship in place where when I put this motion forward to staff, they didn't come and say, oh, you should go and talk to First Nations about this. There was no structural relationship there in which that could be vetted. So it's a bit of a red herring, in my view, to suggest, A, that we should be asking for...
Thank you. We're going to go on to Councillor Dejanova for a minute.
Thanks so much. Councillor Hardwick, I'm just wondering, Councillor Kirby-Young asked one of my questions. I'm going to ask you, do you know how much the Nations have currently invested? Before it was the city, but how much in dollars they've invested in moving this forward, the work that they've been doing? And if that were to stop all of a sudden, who would be picking up the tab for that? Would you expect them to absorb it?
I have no idea, nor would I expect to have any control over what the other parties of the MOU are undertaking. I would only expect that the City of Vancouver, and again, the people that we represent, would be we would be aware of the costs that we would be incurring, and we would be responsible to our electorate to determine our path forward.
Very quickly, how much would this cost? Do you know? Any idea? Do you know how much it costs us to send a property tax mailer?
Well, it certainly costs a significant amount every year for the city to be sending out, you know, in hundreds of thousands of dollars. Again, I pointed out that the plebiscite in 2003 cost over $500,000.
Thank you. Councillor Bly, up to a minute.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wonder, Councillor Hardwick, if you can confirm, are you aware that any documentation, accounting, filings, things like that related to the Vancouver Olympic Committee are accessible to the public currently as of today?
As of today?
Yes, you're referencing earlier in your comments that documentation is not available. In fact, I believe that documentation is available.
The 2010 Olympics documentation is in the archives and it's embargoed until 2025.
That's related to the BC government, not necessarily directly related to the Vancouver Olympics.
The former city manager actually was the person that had that happen.
I think we need to fact check that related to Vancouver Olympic Committee, all of that information is available currently to the public.
Well, then I would challenge that and we'll make that available when we bring this into debate.
Thank you. Councillor Carr, up to a minute.
Yes, thanks, Mayor. Councillor Hardwick, I want to pursue again the issue of whether or not you have formally asked the, especially the host nations, the Lillooet, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Musqueam nations, who are in the lead on this bid, if they support such a referendum.
Can you suggest, Councillor Carr, how I would do that? What structural relationship would there be? Who would I talk to? What would the lines of communication be if indeed that was appropriate? But again, I put this motion in for assessment by staff. At no time did anyone come back and suggest that from staff, for starters. Point number one. Point number two, there is no structure in place whereby we would go to First Nations leadership if I knew who specifically could be making those judgments. But my point in particular is that it's up to us as a member of the MOU to be responsible to our electorate. That's what this is about.
Thank you. That's it for questions from council. I'm calling for a seconder. Once. Twice, three times. No seconder, so thank you very much, Council. We're going to move to item five.
For the record, Councillor Rebecca Bly was wrong. The corporate archives of the Vancouver 2010 organizer, also known as VANOC, are at the City Archives, and the board minutes and financial records are closed to the public until October 2025. VANOC was not subject to British Columbia's Freedom of Information Law, and there was no post-games audit by the Auditor General. It's believed that it cost $7 billion to build and operate the 2010 games. There is no estimate yet for what 2030 could cost. After the council meeting, Councillor Colleen Hardwick issued a statement. She was disappointed that council would sideline the democratic process. The issue is not going away, and she pledges to remind voters that Mayor Kennedy Stewart's city council is not listening to the public. Quote, at the end of the day, whose city is this? 11 members of city council or 660,000 Vancouverites? I'm for the latter, said Hardwick. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan schedules referendum to lower voting age to 18. At least 9.65 million voters will have to cast a ballot in favor at November ballot. A referendum about lowering the voting age to 18 will take place on November 26th, the same day as local elections, the Central Election Commission said on April 15th. The proposal for a constitutional amendment to lower the age from 20 to vote in elections and to be elected was approved by the Legislative Yuan on March 25th in a vote of 109 against 0. According to the Constitution, the measure will need the support of at least half of all eligible voters casting a ballot in the referendum. In Kyoto news, Japan, five Central Asia nations vow to closely communicate over Ukraine. During online talks with ministers and officials of Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan, Foreign Minister Yoshimasa Hayashi condemned Moscow's aggression on Ukraine that began in late February as a serious breach of international law, according to the ministry. This year marks the 30th anniversary of Japan's establishment of diplomatic ties with the five Central Asian countries following their independence from the former Soviet Union. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Frances Hui says she is first Hong Kong activist to gain political asylum in the U.S. Quote, fleeing has never felt so real until this point. My heart sank as I realized I am about to spend the rest of my life away from home, end quote, Hui wrote. Hui said in a Twitter statement on Friday that asylum was granted last September, but she kept it quiet until Thursday while the situation was resolved. Though the process can take years, Hui said her application was approved within 6 months. In 2019, she captured attention after penning an opinion piece titled, I Am From Hong Kong, Not China, for a student publication in the U.S. She left Hong Kong a year later, citing safety concerns.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News.
News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Salem Statesman Journal, former Ducks football player's injuries result of idiotic culture of toughness, attorney argues. The NCAA has refused for decades to protect athletes from coaches who are willing to squeeze the last ounce of competitive juice out of student athletes. An attorney for former Oregon Ducks football offensive lineman Doug Brenner argued during opening arguments in a civil trial that began Tuesday. Brenner claims more than $125 million for pain and suffering and past and future medical expenses against the NCAA, University of Oregon, and football coaches from a series of controversial workouts in 2017. Brenner was diagnosed with the dangerous muscle breakdown condition rhabdomyolysis. In the Tacoma News Tribune, FBI records released in case of man who stole SeaTac plane. Newly released FBI documents show the man who stole an airplane from Seattle-Tacoma International Airport in 2018 seemed unsettled to his loved ones before the theft, which ended when he crashed the plane on Pierce County's Ketron Island. The records say 28-year-old Alaska Airlines ground worker Richard Russell entered the empty turboprop passenger aircraft at about 7:30 p.m. on August 10, 2018 as it sat on an airport tarmac and flew it for about an hour and 10 minutes. The Air National Guard scrambled two fighter jets to intercept the plane, but Russell intentionally crashed it, the records show. The Pierce County Medical Examiner's Office ruled his death a suicide. In Czech news, relentless woodpecker wants world's largest hockey stick in Duncan for its home. A determined woodpecker has targeted the honored and towering wooden stick for its home, and maintenance workers at the Cowichan Community Center that's attached to the stick are trying just as hard to stop him. The woodpecker has been identified as a northern flicker, and this little sapsucker is proving to be one stubborn bird. After carving out its first hole in the 61,000-pound Douglas fir hockey stick last week, maintenance workers stuffed the hole with steel wool, but it didn't last long. The Duncan tourist attraction was originally built for Expo 86 in Vancouver and stood near where Rogers Arena is today. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to people living with autism, people who help to make their lives better, and the scientists who are seeking answers. April is Autism Awareness Month in BC. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Domi bracia, cosa corona.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 17th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 17th of April in 1961, the Bay of Pigs invasion, the failed CIA plot to oust Cuban dictator Fidel Castro. Castro remained in office for another 50 years. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.